Do you recall way back when Minister Barry Jones called scientists a lot of wimps because they failed to demonstrate publicly when the situation needed it? Well, what do you make of this in Adelaide a few days ago?
Museums are not boring. They create new knowledge that helps us understand the world yesterday, today, and tomorrow.
By reducing the number of specialist collection managers and scientists, limiting the management and access of these collections, and hampering the capacity of museum staff to conduct research, the potential for biodiversity conservation in South Australia into the future will be seriously challenged. If the restructure goes ahead, it will place at risk a legacy of research and knowledge going back over 160 years. And it won't just be the scientists who lose something. It will be our Australian species, our ecosystems, our capacity to protect our environment, and our children and grandchildren's chance to enjoy restored biodiversity and natural wonders.
Hello again, Robin Williams, and a science show with both scientists and the scientifically minded up in arms about changes to a museum in South Australia that's been venerable and even peaceful for so long. A public petition has been signed by former ministers, even premiers, and the present Lord Mayor of Adelaide, Dr. Jane Lomax-Smith. Here's what's been happening, a summary from another petition signatory, Professor Rob Morrison of Flinders University, and why he's concerned.
That's something you don't often hear. Enraged scientists protesting in the streets. What prompted it? The planned desecration of one of the nation's foremost scientific institutions, the South Australian Museum. The museum's charter, under law, is to carry out and promote research into matters of science and historical interest, and to accumulate and care for objects and specimens of the same. South Australia is known as the mammalian extinction capital of the world. Since European settlement, it's lost 73 vertebrate species, more than 20 of them mammals, and that's about a quarter of the total, with more on the way. Identifying species and their locations and helping to avoid such catastrophes is the principal role of a museum, but it now seems to be the least regarded in changes proposed for this one. With the sacker and catch cry of reimagining the museum, the current board plans to focus on exhibitions and increased engagement with the public. Original research and describing new species will largely cease. 27 research and collections positions will be abolished and replaced by 22 new positions with different job descriptions and mostly lower pay. The success of South Australian museum scientists in being awarded national grants worth several million dollars is unrivalled by any other Australian museum, and many of these are ARC grants, which are not easily won. In the zoological collections, only three collection managers will now look after nearly 5 million specimens, down from 9 plus a lab manager. One person will have to handle fish, frogs, reptiles, birds, and mammals. The museum's molecular unit is likely to be abolished and its staff made redundant. The fate of its world-class frozen tissue collection is unknown. Over the last 40 years, this unit has discovered more than 500 new species, including 46 now listed as threatened. Even honorary curators and staff who receive no pay are likely to be culled. There will be no cuts to managerial staff. It's an enormous betrayal of the museum's history, proper role, and its charter. What will replace them? It's hard to know. Promised consultations have not occurred. A director of collections and research has been appointed, but since staff may no longer apply for research grants or add specimens to collections, collections and research must have a very peculiar meaning to the current management. One suspects that digital displays will replace real artifacts and scientific discovery. Management claims that most current research at the museum is subject specialized, serves a narrow range of research interests, duplicates university research, and can't be converted onto the museum floor. It's a sweeping generalization and largely untrue. The link with university research gave museums their birth and exhibits, and continues to this day. A few examples. Since its inception in 1856, the SA Museum has been a research institution. E.C. Stirling was the founding professor in the University of Adelaide's Medical School and chairman of the initial South Australian Museum Committee, becoming honorary director in 1889. The Horne Scientific Expedition of 1894 was the first primarily scientific expedition to study the natural history of Central Australia, and it was sponsored by three universities, Sydney, Melbourne, and Adelaide. For museum-based science, it collected and named many new species, some now extinct, and its legacy is profound. Stirling was on it, and began to build an immense collection of specimens relating to Aboriginal life in Australia. The SA Museum now holds the largest such collection in the world. Professor Baldwin Spencer from Melbourne met Francis Gillan at the telegraph station in Alice Springs, and they amassed perhaps the most influential collection of Australian ethnographic material ever assembled, and greatly influenced the early development of European anthropology. Stirling had already collected much inland flora and fauna, including the marsupial mole. Retrieving fossil bones at Lake Calabona on a museum expedition allowed reconstruction of the skeleton of Diprotodon, the largest marsupial ever to have lived. Diprotodon brought the museum and Australian animals into national prominence. It was the first named Australian fossil mammal described by the great English naturalist Richard Owen, who became the foremost authority on marsupials and Australian megafauna. Fascinating to European science, but nobody knew what his feet were like. Owen's engravings show the skeleton incongruously standing in tufts of grass to hide them. Stirling supplied the answer from museum specimens, enabling the first complete skeletons to be assembled and copies sent around the world. Later, the museum's Norman Tyndale mapped the various tribal groupings of Aboriginal Australians at the time of European settlement, and it's been an invaluable map as Indigenous issues and land rights have received increasing prominence in Australia. Management describes a digitally dark museum with currently little connection between research and conservation and the public face of the museum, while its academic research is currently inaccessible to the public. But more than 500,000 of its digital records can be accessed publicly. Research is published in journals, many of them open access. Museum scientists are the public face of research and give many talks and media interviews. Mark Tyler, the Frogman, was an internationally respected frog researcher and science communicator. His museum research featured in books, public programs, and many international TV series, including David Attenborough's Life on Earth. Attenborough also captured Jim Gehling's astonishing work on Ediacaran fossils, so significant that a new age, the Ediacaran period, was added to our charter of life on Earth, earlier than the Cambrian. As a direct result, the Ediacaran Trail now runs through the Flinders Ranges, bringing tourists from other countries and researchers from bodies as influential as NASA. I have personal experience of this. Researching my field guide to tracks and traces of Australian animals, I had free access to the museum's collections. How else do you get thylacine specimens? That material has been used by interstate museums, workshops, other books, and even the Lindy Chamberlain trials. So the museum links with the public have been wide. Management's claim that the museum has hardly changed in the last 30 years is untrue. There have been 8 new or refurbished galleries, including Aboriginal and Pacific Cultures, Opals and Ediacara, Biodiversity, and the Polar Exhibit featuring artefacts of Sir Douglas Mawson, all apparently now not worthy of recognition or continuation. Management argues that the museum needs to attract more people, but its website bursts with claims that it's already one of the most visited museums in Australia, with a dedicated team of scientists and anthropologists who conduct natural history and cultural research, publishing their discoveries in peer-reviewed national and international journals, book chapters and scholarly books, a global leader in research about opal and copper, where research in biological sciences at the South Australian Museum is unparalleled in the world. Exactly. Something is very wrong here, and it's not the website.
Professor Rob Morrison of Flinders University. He too signed the public statement. And here's the newish CEO of the museum on ABC Local Radio in Adelaide.
The SA Museum Chief Executive, Dr. David Gamester, joins us. What are you looking to do for our museum, David?
We're undertaking a reimagining. We're all in this sort of post-pandemic world. We're all kind of rebooting, getting our businesses back up to speed. And this is sort of time to reset and think about the future. And I think everybody's doing that. And we're thinking about, well, what does that museum look like in 10, 20, 30 years? You know, the museum hasn't changed very much in a very long time. You know, the Egyptian room was designed in the 1940s, and you're looking at a 1940s vision of ancient Egypt. There's been transformations in technology and the way in which people engage with knowledge and culture and natural history is very, very different today as it, from it was before, and it will be very different in the future. So it's really about thinking about the future experience for our visitors and how they engage and how they digest information and how we can help people better.
So does that mean more interactivity? Because that seems to be the way that museums are going.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole range of new technologies which enable that to happen and to get people better in the zone, as it were, to understand changes in biodiversity, the climate crisis or whatever it is, or understanding cultures better. If you come to the museum today, you wouldn't know that there have been huge advances in technology.
We do have the lion's tail occasionally flip, I think, which someone says catches the grandchildren by surprise. So does that mean the mummy's going to sit up at one point with laser eyes, David?
We've got a lot of very, very loved exhibits. It's not really worrying about too much about them. We want to go through a process of public engagement and consultation in the next few weeks and months. We want to ask people what they think, what they want, how they want to consume information. We will explore whether we need to retain certain features or not. So this is about the big picture, being able to bring people into an immersive experience about the past, about the present and the future. The critical thing is that we can make it accessible to everyone. That's absolutely fundamental.
South Australia Museum Director Dr. David Gamester on Adelaide Local Radio a few days ago. And on Friday, the South Australian Premier announced that those changes and public consultations will be put on hold, paused. We shall keep an eye on this and let you know what's likely to happen next. It's the real tension between a museum or other institution as mainly a showcase, or maybe one with a strong commitment to scientific investigations of the challenges Australia now confronts.